WWWWTCM News Talk 580. Time for New Retirement Radio now. Prout Financial Design is in the house with Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
It is great to be here on Thursday, August 3rd. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning,
WTCM AM. Great to have you, see you, be here.
Betcha. It's the dude show today with Prout Financial Design.
It's all men for today, anyway. Joining us is Nathan Prout.
Good morning. Nathan.
Morning.
Great to have you here with us, young man. And then John Sluice, CPA, Intrust CPAs in Traverse City, here in Traverse City, Michigan. Great to see you too, John. He's taking notes.
Well, thank you for having me here.
It's great to have you, sir. We have lots to talk about today. Today we're going to be talking about, surprise, taxes. But what's interesting is, as much as things changed from the last few years, what's changing on the good side is that taxes are actually coming down. You heard it here first. What? Well, because of inflation, the actual tax rate that you're going to pay on a fair amount of income these days has actually declined for 2023. So we are talking about 2023 taxes. We're also going to talk about the future somewhat, given that we can get to it, too, because we had a very interesting conversation, John, about what's coming down the track in terms of taxes. So for those of you who do pay taxes still, you want to listen in. And for those of you who are listening today, thank you. We love doing this show and love your questions. Any inquiries, you bet. Appreciate it. So, John, the first thing for 23 is the income tax brackets have expanded.
Yeah, I mean, when we were talking ahead of time, that there wasn't a significant number of new things that came out this year. But what did come is just a normal progression of the increase in inflation or increase in adjustments. So the standard rate deduction went up. So it's a bigger standard deduction because it was adjusted by inflation.
And that standard deduction is not a small amount.
It's not, especially under the new tax code in 2018. It was significant.
Right. That amount, just because you brought it up, I mean, what the heck? It's for married couples filing jointly, they get $27,700 as a standard deduction. Mm-hmm. Now, if they're 65 or older, they'll get an additional $1,500 on top of that.
Mm-hmm. What's the standard deduction?
27.7. Huge number.
Yep. And the way to think of a standard deduction, and this is a common question that comes up, and people are getting comfortable with it now because we're so used to the old way of doing it where you tracked all your receipts. Ultimately, the IRS said, we don't want to deal with those. It's just easier just to give people the assumption of what do you want to choose. You can still deduct things if you want to. The example that I give is think of your interest in your charitable donations, in your property taxes, and all those things. Think of each one of them as a small rock, right? The IRS gives you a big boulder. Now, if you and that's your standard deduction, is a big boulder. If you take those small rocks and you add them all up together and the pile of the small rocks is bigger in size than the boulder, well, then you take the pile of small rocks because you can add all those little ones up. But if you don't want to go through the process or if the smaller pile doesn't make sense to take, you can get the boulder, which is the bigger standard deduction. Well, what's happening here is that has increased. The boulder got bigger. Mm. And so because of that, you have less taxable income. And therefore, without doing anything different year over year, you are going to pay less taxes this year than you did last year.
Well, it's not just due to the standard deduction. It's due to the amounts that are where we're taxed.
Correct.
In terms of the actual tax bracket. The 12% tax bracket for couples filing jointly for taxable income went up to $89,450. Mm-hmm. That's taxable
income, too, which means that you tack on top of that standard deduction. So your total income would be more than that.
Right.
So this gets into ultimately one of the best tax things that we're talking with our clients on right now is the idea that we're in some of the lowest tax dollars that we have right now. And so everyone, when they first start thinking about it, they want to say, hey, I want to get as many deductions as possible. I want to pay as little as taxes this year as possible. We got to try to shift that mindset and say we have to look at it from a lifetime of taxes, not a one given year. And so if we look if down the road in, say, 2 or 3 or 4 years, taxes are going to go up, we have low taxes now. We may want to recognize income now to take advantage of some of these higher tax brackets that we have because we have so much flexibility with these higher brackets.
Right, and that's going to spin some people's heads around. What? You're telling me that I need to pay more tax? Why would I want to do that again today?
Because I like paying tax at 12% much better than I do at 24% rate. And if I look at it from a
Hang on a second. Does that make sense to you, Ron? I mean, are you with us on that one?
You kind of have to predict the future, though, don't you?
Ooh. Yes, and I always tell my clients, too, that I have my crystal ball is very cracked and quite hazy. But with that in mind, you are predicting. You are tax planning. You're looking at it, and you're using your facts and circumstances, which comes back to one of my favorite things of saying is know your bracket, because you might be in the 12% bracket, and we want to make sure we're always targeting that. Or you might be in the 24% or the 35%. You want to kind of know where you are, because we're going to be erring and making sure that we get too much. Meaning, if you all of a sudden 1 year have way low on income, don't get too giddy. Use that as an opportunity to recognize and to do an overall lifetime tax planning strategies.
To do possibly a Roth conversion. So how That's could I add levers. To that income so I'm paying such a discounted rate? So given that these rates are basically at historic lows, I never want to use at historic lows, but basically they're, you know, which way do you think they're going to go in the future?
I'm going to go with up.
Yeah. Mm. That's what Ed Slott and others in our world say.
Was that bill the 2017 tax bill? Didn't that have a
sunset?
That's
exactly what we're talking about, is that sunset. So that sunset is looming. It's coming in 2025. And so we're in these couple years here where you said we can't predict the future.
Okay.
I can't predict it, but I do know that it's sunsetting in 2025. What's the likelihood of that extending? I don't know. We can take pools or, you know, guesses on that, but we put probability on it, right? That's one of the strategies. But if we use the facts and circumstances what we have today, we know a hard stop in 2025. Biggest being is the QBID, the Qualified Business Income Deduction. That sunsets. So as a business owner, that's a 20% increase
once that sunsets. In 2025.
Correct. Sunsets 2025.
While we don't think those are going to be continued, given the current political realities, who knows?
Right.
They could possibly be extended to a certain point. But that's an easy tax increase for the Fed government to take a look at
sunset. It's a hidden tax increase because it's an increase by doing nothing.
A stealth tax, if you will.
Yeah.
So how do you plan on that to happen?
Is you do multi-year tax planning strategies when you're looking at this, and you're saying, well, let's maybe recognize income this year. And so you mentioned a Roth conversion. That's one of the levers. One of them might be, so instead of taking accelerated depreciation, so a lot of business owners are just so used to saying, when I buy a vehicle or I buy a piece of equipment, I'm expense all of it this year. Well, we may want to say, well, no, this year we're a little bit lower anyway. So maybe we push them out and we take it over 5 years instead of immediately, saving some of those deductions for future years. Or maybe you've got some plans from employers, some stock option plans that you have that you haven't exercised, and you want to choose to exercise some of those. So there's lots of different levers that you can be using, and every person is going to be different. So thinking through the different levers that you have and the different options are important.
What about capital gains? Did someone consider taking some capital gains over the next few years?
Could, and actually this gets to a point, and I hate paying taxes, right? I love paying taxes at the 0% rate. It's my favorite thing ever. Getting to capital gains, we might find that we are in a bracket that would allow us to have a 0% tax. And there are brackets where capital gains are the 0%. And so there is some thresholds there where we might utilize that. And that might be an example where we're going to sell some things and recognize 0% tax and have an increased basis.
For those who have loss carry forwards, you've got how much of a loss can be taken per year?
Well, you can take up to your gains and then an additional $3,000.
So in essence, let's say there were no gains to offset. You can take $3,000 a year. Mm-hmm. But if you have carry forwards, if you have a carry forward loss, you can use up to 100% of your gain if they're equal.
Yep.
So, taking a look at the big picture with this.
Yeah, and the fundamental shift that we're talking about here, so the tax planning this year is to think about on down years or on years where you know the horizon might look where it's going to be higher taxes down the road. Tax planning is to say maybe we consider this year as one that we recognize some income faster than what we would have, or we push off some of the deductions that we would have. Mm. So that's a lot of what the tax planning is right now. And I'm not saying this is going to apply for everybody.
Yeah.
There are certain individuals where this might be a year that you doesn't make sense to do it, right? But it's one that we are seeing it more often than not this year for clients.
Correct. Now, there are always some gotchas, if you will. So you do want to be careful with income for those who are over the age of 65, mm-hmm. for the Medicare.
Yep. IRMA.
IRMA, the income-related Medicare adjustment.
IRMA and I are not friends.
No, they're not. I'm not friendly either. So that's if your income is too high, you're going to pay an increasing amount for your Medicare premium. Your Medicare premiums go up pretty significantly if your income is too high. So those are some of the things to be aware of.
The health, yeah. the marketplace health plans and the yeah. premium tax credits and otherwise. So there are things to consider. And that gets into, too, again, we want to look at your lifetime tax bracket, right? So you want to make sure you're levelizing your income. You don't want too low or too high.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in the periods of the too low, we want to take advantage of some of these income. Likewise, when we're too high, we want to bring it down. So we want to pull and push the different levers.
Man, shifting sands. And this also points up to me the importance, we talked about this, in trying to visit with your tax planning, your CPA, now when you're relatively... Yeah.
This is the important time to talk to your accountant now through end of year, because this is where you can make decisions. You can decide what you're doing, not after the year. It's done. You can't do anything at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need to be thinking. And I would actually say a couple times before. So I always have, right now we're having the meetings with our clients. I call them the scary meetings, which is we tell them the worst case scenario and we start planting seeds of what are some of the things we may do. I've mentioned many levers here, right? We've talked about the Roth conversion. We've talked about some stock options. We talked about different things. We want to at least talk about the options, because then we need to mull them over and we need to think about them. And then we need to come back again once we have better information, maybe September, October, November, and actually really revisit of, okay, where did things really fall out? Where are we in? And then actually then decide, okay, of the four different levers or the four different things that we talked about that were possibilities, which is the one that we're going to actually pull? And then it gives us some time to do it too.
That's interesting. This tax bracket we were talking about at 12%, 89.5 in essence of the top taxable income. If you add the 27.7, you're at about 117,000 of total income.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great illustration of how low those tax rates are at 12%.
Mm-hmm. That's lower than the capital gains unless you're in the 0% rate.
Right. Now, when someone has a capital gain, let's discuss this and then we'll take our break. But how is that added onto income? Because capital gains are taxed at zero. To a certain point, the zero rate applies in 2023. The zero rate applies for, joint returns for income up to 89,250.
What you're getting to there is, so you've got generally speaking, and again, I'm generalizing when I say this, but you have ordinary income and you have capital gains.
Right.
Okay, so ordinary is what you earn this year. Capital gain is what you're getting for deferred things, so holding stocks, holding other things like that, land, otherwise. Capital gain is always a favorable rate to ordinary. So ordinary is going to be higher. So if you're in the 12% ordinary rate, to give you 15% capital gain wouldn't be fair. So that's where they do the zero. So if you're in the 12 ordinary, you're at zero capital gain. Again, generally. If you're at the 24% ordinary, you're in the 15% capital. So that's where those two different rates, because you always have a two-tiered system between ordinary and capital. Mm. And again, that's where I'm looking. If we can get it to where you're in the 12% ordinary in 0% capital, you want to see an accountant get giddy. There's an example of an accountant getting giddy. 12% ordinary and 0%,
capital
I love
gains.
0% tax brackets. My favorite thing.
Awesome. So obviously, if a client is watching the amount of their capital gain, because there's going to be an add back in, correct? How does that work for a capital gain? Long-term capital gains, how do those add into income to determine the
It's total.
Amount?
So it's total income that we're talking about here. So it's just how do you divvy up between what's ordinary and what's capital gain? So when you talk about the 112,000 or 117,000. That 117 is total income. So it's some of it's ordinary and some of it's capital gain. I'm also further generalizing because there's Social Security, which is in the middle of that, and there's other things. But it's additive. It's just a matter of what's the various different rates. So getting back to where I say is know your rate, because it's a total income that we're talking about, and it's what's the different rates that what levels are we pulling to. One year we might run a record as more capital gain, another more ordinary, and knowing when do we push and pull. Because there are other things that impact that, IRMA, the tax credits that are not related to income, other things.
So obviously there are a lot of pieces to this picture, yep. But again, if you're aware of that, that makes, you mentioned you're going to be teaching a class at our Lunch and Learn program on 11/15 or November 15th called Minding the Gap. Mm-hmm. Now, that's going to be helping those who are 5 years away from retirement and or 5 years after, making certain that they're aware of the tax changes that are going to be occurring as they retire. Right. What a great class I think that's going to be. That's a Lunch and Learn. If you do want to sign up for it, you're welcome to do that at our office, 231-947-3992. That's goes from 12 to 1, and you've got a lot of information for that class. But you also mentioned the importance of a person knowing their tax bracket, and that goes back as well mm-hmm. to what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Minding the Gap gets into the idea that before 5 years before and 5 years after, in my opinion, are some of the most significant tax planning opportunities you have, because you're coming in from significantly ordinary income as an earner, that's your working years. Then you're going to, later in your retirement, you're going to be more or less established to what you're going to be getting. You're going to have your RMDs. You're going to have your passive income that's established. You're going to have your pensions coming in. There's this middle period here where it's before you've retired, you're planning for what's going to happen those few years after. So it's before Social Security kicks in, before your pension might kick in. Maybe you want to defer your pension a couple years or defer Social Security and pull the triggers on a few other things. So it's really watching to make sure we levelize out and don't end up with that gap.
Really looking at the forest versus the trees. Correct. And we have a phone call, Ron.
We will go to Fred in Sutton's Bay on New Retirement Radio. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning. I'm retired, and I do have a part-time job, doing a little carpentry, and I signed up as an employee to this employer, and they take out the regular federal withholding, Social Security, and Medicare things out of my check. My concern was, is there a maximum amount? I mean, I don't do this every day. Maybe don't have to worry about it, but I am concerned. How much can I earn before I mess up my Social Security?
Well, good morning, Fred. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, it's good to hear your voice. Thanks for calling, Fred.
You bet. So on that, that's a loaded question, which most questions are when you talk to an accountant, right? I welcome the opportunity just to say yes or no at one point in life.
Okay.
But there's two different messing up generally in Social Security. There's the before full retirement age, and then there's the after, because it's two items that we're thinking about. So if you start taking Social Security before full retirement age, you have potentially giving dollar for dollar, or you know, a 2-for-1 or a 3-for-1, depending on where you fall, giving it back. So if they give you $100 of Social Security and you make more than certain levels, you have to give it all back. It's not lost. They just re-spread it out. They said you're making too much to retire. You're not really retired.
Well, so, I'm 81. So.
Well, so then you clearly are past the full retirement age. So that is a
okay.
good thing.
Right.
So now where you're at is going to be, is it taxable or not? And then this is going to come into play of not only your job that you're doing, but it's also going to come into your RMDs that you're going to have. It's going to be coming into Roth conversions, and it's going to have, you know, other sources of income that you've got, because that all plays in. It gets its total income that we're playing into here. And so you got to look at it overall. And there, unfortunately, I wish I could tell you that there's a I can give you the numbers, and I can spend the time to go through the calculation on whether or not it's going to be taxable or not. But if you want to know, the worst calculation that is out there is whether or not Social Security is taxable, because it makes my mind spin as to what it is, because Social Security in and of itself is not taxable. However, it is used in its own calculation to determine whether it's taxable. So you talk about double dipping and triple dipping and within the same calculation, and if you ever need an example of telling your kids why they need to have algebra and where they're going to use it later in life, you can say to understand Social Security, because that is where you have to understand. So we can give a certain thing, a certain number, and you know, and so that's where you'd want to talk to your tax advisor and get those projections for it, and then they can give you a hard number given the facts that you have of your other income sources that may come in, including your job, because then what you're talking about, specifically the question you're asking that started this was, what is your variable? What can you change? Which is the employment income.
But he won't be penalized by Social Security. He can earn as much as he wants, and they won't cut his Social Security benefit, right? Because he's beyond his full retirement age?
Not cut it and give it back, but it can become taxable. Yeah. And it's a double dipping because, again, in and of itself, Social Security is not taxable. And so if Social Security is zero, now let's say you push over the threshold and you made an extra
$10,000. The threshold is not that high, though, to be clear. I'm going to interrupt this because the threshold's only $45,000, $48,000. It's not that high an amount to where you're going to be paying 85% tax on your Social Security benefits.
Right.
So to be clear, Fred, it's not a very high threshold to be able to, when you're at the maximum tax on your Social Security benefits, okay?
I can't see where I'd earn more than $7,500, you know? I mean, this isn't a... It's a part-time job, but it's on demand, you know, maybe a day and a half this week and half a week next week. You know, it's just up and down that way. It just it gives me something to do other than just hanging around the house.
And that's where, too, it is that income, but it's other income as well. So it's also the draws from retirement accounts. It's draws from pensions and otherwise. So,
All right, Fred in Sutton's Bay, thanks for tuning in and calling in. And we have another call for our panel today with New Retirement Radio. Doug is in Traverse City. Good morning, Doug.
Morning.
Morning, Doug.
I have a question for you. My wife and I are looking at selling our home, just the two of us now. Our family's gone. Looking at downsizing. And I'm wondering if what we're going to do is buy a smaller house, pay cash for it. We'll have a fair amount of money left over to do some things or whatever, but do I wind up paying capital gains on something like that?
Again, it depends. It's an accountant's favorite answer. But assuming that you've lived there for more than two of the last 5 years, and assuming you haven't rented it or used it for business purposes, and assuming ... but let's go through all of those assumptions, that it's just been your normal primary residence, and you've been more than two of the last 5 years, you have... Go ahead.
Yeah, we've been there several years, 15, 17 years, and it is our primary residence.
Okay, so if that's the case, then you each of you has a $250,000 gain exclusion on the sale of your primary residence. So if it's the two of you, it's $500,000. You got to look at the ownership and how you're filing your taxes, but let's generalize and say it's a $500,000 gain exclusion, and that's gain exclusion. And so if you bought your house for $300,000 and you're selling it for $1 million, that's at $300,000, so you're at $700,000, what gets excluded is the $500,000, and you would pay taxes, capital gains, on $200,000. So you would likely not pay income taxes, but be aware that that does impact total household resources in the state of Michigan. So if you're one that's used to getting the property tax credit or a few other credits, it's used in the factors ancillary. But from an income tax point of view, you likely will have excluded.
Okay, so we should be pretty good then.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Doug, for the call there on New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design.
And that is a huge tax break.
Huge.
Just to put a point to it, $500,000 in no tax on
it's
the gain
too.
On a residence. If you've lived in it for the last 2 to 5 years and it's not been a business, as it were, that's fantastic in terms of gain. In that we're talking gain, so it's also going to be dependent upon any improvements. Mm-hmm. Would that be accurate as well?
Correct.
John?
Yep.
Yeah,
improvements.
So it's not just the original price that you paid, but it's the new sidewalk you put in.
The new deck, kitchen upgrade. You got to substantiate it, but yes. So the question that came through is it the purchase price or is it the mortgage refinance that comes out? And the answer on that is it is purchase plus additional costs like the deck or otherwise. Mortgage has nothing to do with it. So very common I'll get people say, well, I netted $20,000 after my mortgage. I'm like, I don't care what I do, but I don't care what you net because it has the mortgage implication. Now, if you never refinanced, it gives me a good idea, but there's so many chances, especially if you've held it for a long time, where you've refinanced and refinanced and refinances. What you're paying back on debt does not impact taxes. It's the purchase price plus additions. That gets to your basis. It's ultimately your basis that I care about, and mortgages do not tell basis.
Basis is the key term for the IRS. Mm-hmm. What you paid plus...
Substantiated basis.
Yes, substantiated basis plus improvements. Again, basis. Yes, Ron.
And we had one text message reminds us, too, according to Jack Lane, reminds people if you move, you may pay higher property taxes because of the higher cost basis on the new home.
Yeah, so, that's the uncapping that happens in Michigan. So when you buy a property taxes, you pay it on it's 50% of the purchase price, the SEV. So
the real estate tax comes into it when you purchase the new home.
So if you've lived in a house and you know you bought it 20 years ago and you paid $300,000 for it, you're paying taxes on a house that paying taxes effectively on $150,000 ish. And now you flip it and you buy something that and you downsized, but it might have a higher taxable value. So even though you downsized, you might be paying more in property taxes. Yeah. Thanks, Jack.
That's a great point.
Okay.
All right. Stats. Interesting stats that kind of go into what we're talking about today as well as the market. Nathan.
Yeah. So according to CNBC, so last Wednesday, as we all know, the Federal Reserve hiked the funds rate to a range of between 5.25% and 5.5%, which is the highest since 2001. Despite high short-term interest rates, the average savings account has a yield of just 0.42%, and yet 68% of middle-income Americans surveyed by Santander said that they have not moved deposits into higher yielding accounts.
What's the average savings rate, did you say?
0.42%.
That surprised me to hear that rate because I'm hearing from more clients. And wait, Dennis, should I keep that money in my savings account when it's only earning a point, whatever it is? And isn't that interesting? Banks, in essence, are sitting on their hands in terms of raising rates on savings accounts.
Yeah,
because of the cost that they're seeing in terms of their operations. But
you're seeing there is it's ease, right? That means I have to go in and file some more paperwork and I have to ask the questions.
It means they have to move, sometimes it's much easier. Status quo, if you will.
Yeah, even if you don't want to get a new bank, T-bill rates are pretty competitive right now and should pay you more than that.
T-bill rates, treasury bills, the safest money out there, about 5.25%, 5.3% approximately right now.
Yeah. Another interesting fact, and this is for all you Taylor Swift fans out there, which definitely includes me. So the Taylor Swift Eras Tour of 117 concerts worldwide is projected to add up to $5 billion to the global economy, according to the market research firm Question Pro.
That's a B for billion.
That insane?
The Swifties that were surveyed said they spent an average of $1,300 per show, a whopping $720 more than their intended budget. Even with the added expenses, 91% shook it off and said they'd do it again.
Sounds like a Taylor Swift song, Shake It Off, you know? Isn't that a wild thing? What are they saying? We were talking about this pre-show. Her creativity, it's not, Earl, and this goes back to Earl Nightingale, it's not about being able to compete. It's about being able to create. Yeah. And she has an insane ability to create. You know, she's talked about it. We've seen her, many have seen her interviewed. She can't sleep at night. What does she do? She goes, sits in piano and writes another song.
Yeah, new song for every show.
It's incredible, you know, how much she's created. And then you see all these itinerant other industries growing up and the people serving, I will just say the kids when they come into town, you know, a dozen of donuts that all have all of her album covers on them. You know, they've hand done them on the donuts and people just go crazy about that stuff. So the huge economic impact of creativity and her abilities aren't bad either. You know, she can sing after all, right?
Right.
We had a text earlier today. We were talking about the prices of rock concerts and somebody said, we saw Chicago and Moody Blues together at Springfest, Johnson City, Tennessee in the 90s, $10 a ticket.
Can you believe it? What a concert that must have been. Yeah. Wow.
There's a due Moody index Blues? For inflation right there.
Yes.
Concert ticket increase.
Ouch.
Yeah. All right. And then these two stats are tied together, so stick with me for a minute. So last Thursday, July 27th, the S&P 500 closed at a short-term overbought levels, which is more than standard deviation above a 50-day moving average, for the 42nd straight day, a streak that started the Friday before Memorial Day. So the current streak is the longest since September of 2020, which was 45 days, and the 24th streak of 40 or more trading days in the last 70 years. And that's according to Bespoke. So what do we do with that information? In the 24 prior periods since 1953 that the S&P 500 closed at short-term overbought levels, which again is more than one standard deviation above the 50-day moving average, for 40 days in a row, its median performance over the next 6 and 12 months was 5.5% and 11.3% respectively, with positive returns 83% of the time.
Which goes totally against my preconceived notion. Absolutely. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Not what I was thinking it would be.
So, obviously, the chances, I'll just say it, of a short-term correction are relatively significant, which I think we're seeing here. The markets have been down here in the last few days. But in the long term, 6 months, a year, this could be simply a buying opportunity.
Right, and who knows if that short-term correction is also related to that little bit of a credit downgrade that we just got.
Yeah, from the Fed,
right?
AAA to AA+. Who would have thought that would have ever happened? Imagine they have almost too much debt. All right, is that it on the stats?
That's it.
All right, more on the tax front. Are we ready to dive in here, John?
We can.
You're still with us?
I'm good. Always excited about talking taxes.
Now, Qubit. You mentioned the qualified business deduction, in essence.
Mm-hmm.
What is that? And the fact that it's going to go away in 2025, you said, I think we have a fair number of business owner listeners.
Mm-hmm.
What is the impact going to be if that's allowed to sunset?
What it is, and I'm going to simplify it, is it's a 20% free deduction on taxable income derived in the United States profit. So it was designed to incentivize businesses to have taxable income in the U.S., right? And I'm way
over. To bring their businesses and or business here. Back to the United
back
States.
Back to the United States, but also to be taxable. So, and I'm simplifying that, right? So there's so many, I mean, tax volumes have been written about this, right? And so I'm simplifying it.
Mm-hmm.
You asked what it was. How I would also answer what it is it's simplification through complication. So I just got done saying it's tax volumes over it. But short-term version of it is saying it's making accountants and others really question whether we take deductions, getting back to what we started the show on, of saying it's not always better to take a deduction. Because what it does is I get a free, it's free deduction. So normally to get a deduction, you have to spend a dollar, right? So I spend a dollar, I get a deduction. But I really spent that dollar. This is, I get 20% without spending the money. So it makes me second guess whether I want to take a deduction, because if I don't take the deduction, I get a free 20%, and I know that's going to go away. So I have this period here where if I save a deduction until after that is gone, I just got a 20% deduction this year versus then. And so taking income this year versus after it's gone, it makes more sense. So again, the tax planning today is a fundamental earth-shattering shift away from pushing deductions or taking an income now or taking deductions now and pushing income off.
Okay, let's just take a break. Yeah. And now what you're saying is the common theme that all of us have is if we can push income into the future, we can defer, defer, if you will. I think that must be a quote for some movie, Ron. Can you look that up in the meantime? No, I'm just kidding. But anyway, what you're saying is we're always trying to defer into the future, but taking some income now again, given that you've got your own business, taking that income and making certain that you are taking it in this next couple of years may be one of the better things you could possibly do.
Yeah, maybe. And so let's use a good example on this. Business is profitable, has $100,000 of profits. And again, I'm just rounding and making numbers up, but let's say $100,000. Mm-hmm. And one of the age-old conclusions might be, well, let's contribute into a profit-sharing plan. So I'm going to take $100,000, I'm going to put $50,000 into a profit-sharing plan. Great. I take that $50,000, I deduct it, and I'm going to push that deduction in the future because as a profit-sharing plan, it's going to a 401k and it's going to come out down the road as ordinary income. So you're just deferring it off. But what I'm get, so I take my income from $100,000 down to $50,000. The problem, though, is I just lost a permanent 20% free deduction that I would have had on $100,000. So I just gave up on $20,000 of free deduction that I'm not going to have when I take the income down the road. So it's a permanent loss as compared to a temporary shift. So I'm going to go back to the simplification through complication, because what it makes me do is second guess all these other little close loopholes. It's really close to doing it, but let's make this decision. Let's contribute to the profit sharing plan. Let's do this deferred loophole. Let's do these different things. And it takes those tools away a little bit. So.
All right. So it's making you second guess some of your tax planning that have been in force for years, but it's a good thinking, thought process, and discussion to have.
Yeah, and I'm not saying, and don't hear what I'm not saying. Don't hear me say that 401ks are bad, and don't hear me say profit sharing is not planned, and don't hear me say that I'm not saying take deductions right now, and don't hear me say that it's not good to get as many deductions as we can. What it's making me, what I'm hear me say, it makes us pause to really make the decision is it better to take a deduction now versus later, which is exactly what the IRS wanted in the Treasury and then the legislation wanted, was because it wants to recognize tax because they wanted to generate revenue, and it's willing to take it today versus down the road. It's
always
the typical government.
Well, that's the same thing they did with retirement plans when the beneficiary IRAs. It went from a full, you know, perhaps 20 to 30 year time frame to draw those funds out versus now it's 10. Mm-hmm. So it's the income realized much more quickly by a lot of beneficiaries there, which is another stealth tax. Now, there's been a lot of advertisements, and we were talking about this before the show as well. ERC. Thank you, not ERD.
Employee Retention Credit.
Employer Retention Credit. That's advertised all the time. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that and what that's about.
So it is a real tax credit that's out there. It's part of the COVID, so it's not something that's false. But it is scams. The IRS are out there. There are scammers out there that are doing it. And again, it's unfortunate because the scammers are making something that was good, making it bad. It does apply to some businesses. It was meant for when you're fully or partially shut down. And we as a firm have gotten many dollars for our clients for this, and it's something that you should look at, and you should ask your accountant, your trusted advisor, as to whether it applies or not. The challenge that you're going to have on this, there are very specific thresholds of what you do or you don't qualify. These scammers that are out there and these ads that are getting there, they're taking information generally from publicly available PPP. So when these businesses got PPP loans, that became publicly available. So they're using that information to just target business owners and taking a generalization of what could be. And they make assumptions. And then these numbers are like, well, and they're making it look like it's real, like they really, really do qualify. And for certain people, or certain businesses, it does. But it's so much more than just that quick, yes, you automatically apply. And the IRS is warning taxpayers that there are the scammers out there. And those scammers, what they're doing is they're taking a cut of the credit, and then they're disappearing, and they're gone, and then you're left on the hook.
Now, so they're taking perhaps 25% of the amount that's credited back to the business as their payment for services.
And unfortunately, and it's not a clear-cut credit. There is a lot that's in there, and so there are safe harbors that are out there. You have to have revenue reductions. You have to be partially shut down. But it's not clear-cut. Now, there are safe harbors. But it's something that you should talk to, or as a business owner, talk to your trusted advisor, because they can walk you through and they can tell through what it is or isn't, is whether it's going to work or not.
All right. So it's not that common, because a business, in essence, you said, has to have a decline of 50% in their revenue.
50 or 20% depends on the year, and it depends on the period.
or partially, the main one is partially shut down. So many businesses qualified for the period if you're in Michigan during the stay-at-home order in Michigan. But it gets into so much more than that, because then these ones that are aggressive are pointing to one specific question and answer that the IRS had on it's on supply chain disruption, and so there's so many more nuances on it. But the short version is, it's not necessarily a great thing to get this credit. We like the cash, we certainly, and if we get it, we're going to qualify. We want to do it. But if you get it, it's because you are truly down, or you truly were shut down, and you were overpaying your employees. That's what the intent of this was. And so as a business owner, you overpaid your employees, or your revenue was so far down that it needs to make it up. And so this is one of those, if you say you got it, you kind of have other things that we got to be talking about as well, because you were harmed that much.
Yeah, survivability might be one of them.
I've got a follow-up question from earlier. The original question you addressed: are gain exclusions calculated on initial purchase price or refinanced amounts? And that same text says, thank you for your expertise. One more question, please. I'm not married. Will my estate benefit from the gain exclusion, or should I sell before I die and move to a smaller house?
Loaded question again, and I wish I could give a yes-no answer, is the estate does not get that gain exclusion. However, so there might be reason to do it and sell, but the estate does have other implications, right? They have the estate tax threshold. That's currently, we were just talking this before.
It's really high, though. It's
really,
probably
really
not going to come into.
And so it's the immediate answer is they're not even applicable to each other, and so it's something you got. They're two different things that you're talking through. Right.
And one other comment here. I love my self-employed pass-through tax deduction. Mm-hmm. I plan to retire before it is supposed to expire.
Mm-hmm. So
2025.
So 1/1 of 25 is when it comes back under current laws. Is that what you're saying, John?
I'm saying it's 2025, and during the break I will find that answer.
All right.
We have no
great.
More breaks.
Oh, well, you've got to talk
breaks.
Amongst yourselves.
But
back to work.
Will there be pressure, do you think? I mean, regardless of who's in control in Washington, when the word goes out and says, hey, all these great tax breaks are going to expire, so everyone's taxes will go up, employers, self-employed, et cetera. Do you think there'll be pressure to just extend it? See, that'll be, 2024?
Actually, 2025 is
January 25.
The end of 2025 is the sunset, so it'd be really 1/1/26 generally. And again, there's always different thresholds and different dates. And
I wonder if that would be a presidential election issue as we get in late 24.
It will become, but again, it's one of those, it's defaulted to go away, and so you're going to have to act, and this is Congress as well, right? And so you're going to have to get Congress to make an act to make it stay the same
or to extend it. That would be the most likely possibility, but the chances of that, I would say, are probably pretty slim, given their history of raising taxes. Okay? All right. Now, there's one other thing we wanted to talk about, too.
The
Corporate Transparency Act.
So this is unfortunately not a fun tax planning one, but it's one that I wanted to at least get people thinking about. It's on the horizon. It technically does not start until January 1st of 2024, but it's one of the things that's kind of hidden. It's not actually in a tax law or legislation. Rather, it's in the Defense Act that got passed, so it's an anti-terrorism thing, but it's called the Corporate Transparency Act, and it applies, interestingly enough, most things apply to larger businesses. This applies to smaller businesses. They're trying,
how small of a business?
So to not have you apply, you have to have less than 20 full-time employees or less than $5 million in revenue. So you are exempted if you have more than that. So you're exempted if you have more than 20 full-time employees or $5 million in revenue. They're targeting the smaller businesses on purpose. Really what they're targeting are the shells. You hear the shells that are out there, like the tax evasion shells and the defunct businesses and otherwise that are out there. And unfortunately, they're getting all the normal businesses that are just doing what they're supposed to do. Excuse me. But what they're trying to get to is they want to understand who owns the business. So you have all these different layers of corporate entities, LLCs, S-corps, businesses, and they're multi-layers, or it's owned by another LLC or owned by a trust or otherwise. They're trying to drive down, and the they is FinCEN, not the Treasury. It's FinCEN. is trying to understand who ultimately owes it. So where I'm getting to is, as a business owner, you are likely going to have to, if you qualify for these things, provide FinCEN on a regular basis your address, your photo, your updated information. And so it's not, it's you're going to have to look through who the owner is. And so if you have 10 owners, they're all going to have to contribute in. And even if you do qualify for your operating business, so say your operating business has 30 employees, oftentimes people structure entities where their real estate business is held on, and there's no employees or something along those lines. So you're also going to still have to be contributing. Where I kind of explain this is, think of The Sopranos, right? So if you're watching The Sopranos and you're watching the show and the restaurant, so the restaurants, who's the restaurant owned by? Is it Artie or Tony, right? And so it's, you're sitting there and you know the guy, you know Tony really in the back. He's the one that controls it. He's the one that's there. They're trying to get to that. He doesn't own it. He controls it. And so they're trying to find out who the who's really controlling these entities. They're trying to dig in and get more information. So it's a lot of compliance, a lot of disclosure.
As you said, for a lot of businesses under 20 employees, under 5 mil revenue, just going about doing their jobs, doing their business, they'll have to do all this.
Correct.
Wow.
And the they is, and it's a hard thing because it's required by FinCEN. So is it the accountants that are going to be doing it? Is the attorney going to be doing it? Is the business owners going to be doing it? And so it may not be significant for many businesses, but it's something you have to work through. But you have to think through.
So you want to be aware of this. That's, FinCEN is actually FinCEN. The Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, a government agency. All right, great. We need to call it an end. Thank you, Ron.
Special guest today, John Sluice, InTrust CPA in Traverse City. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout from ProutFinancialDesign.com in Traverse City. Thank you all.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you.
Advisors associated with Proud Financial Design may be either 1. Registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, or 2. Solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, CG Advisory Services, and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision.